Welcome to Traveling Culturati, where we explore cultures and share travel news, travel tips, destinations, and travel chats. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Well, hey there, fellow Culturati, Javon Harley here, your host and travel pro for Traveling Culturati. I want to thank you for coming back for another week of travel news, travel tips, and travel chats. Well, one of the things we want to make sure that you do before we go any further is to join the travel club. Yes, you can do that on social media. You can do that by signing up for the newsletter. Go to travelingculturati.com. We share a lot of great information, updates, news. So maybe if you've missed something, you can always check it out there. But also you can be the first to know when we're on the go to some fabulous places. And you're just going to love this group, really. We have a great time when we travel. We are all Culturati. We love food. We love libations. We love life. And we would love for you to join us in a fantastic destination and to join us in the travel club. Well, today, Elaine Lee, editor of Go Girl 2, the Black woman's book of travel and adventure, joins me with her inspiration and experiences that led her to expanding and revising and updating this edition. Yes, there was a Go Girl 1. We'll also have Javon's Travel Minute. And of course, the Culture Report. Chef Ruby is coming back for part 2. Absolutely love chatting with her, and her food is amazing. But first, you know, we've got some travel news. And the National Park Service awards grants to African American history projects in Michigan and other places. You know, one thing you really should know is that National Park Services have a lot of Black history sites. And so it's wonderful that they are awarding this grant. They recently awarded $23.4 million to projects preserving civil rights history, including a survey on historic African American tourism in Michigan. One of the awarded projects will survey sites listed in the Negro Motorist Green Book, an annual travel guide by Victor Hugo Green that was published in 1936 and 1964. African Americans referenced the book to travel safely on U.S. Route 66 while segregation laws and extrajudicial violence prevailed. Listed as led by the Michigan Strategic Fund, the project will survey gas stations, rooming houses, and resorts to commemorate African American experiences along the famous highway, which spans from Chicago to Los Angeles. The Green Book listed hotels, homes, restaurants, and stores welcoming Black patrons in Michigan, as displayed in a 2023 exhibit at Detroit's Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History. Most Michigan locations listed in the book no longer exist. The survey report will also detail context on African American recreational tourism in Michigan. According to a fiscal year 2023 grant synopsis posted on the NPS website, Eastern Michigan University also is slated to receive $75,000 in grant funds to survey history resources on Detroit's East Side, including the role of fair housing resources, community, activism, and religion in civil rights history in the city, according to the grant synopsis. EMU will draw on geographic information systems or digital tools to interpret geographic data and public engagement to share information on the project. The NPS award funds will be distributed to 39 projects across 16 states and the District of Columbia as part of its Historic Preservation Fund's African American Civil Rights Grants Program. Chuck Sams, the agency's director, said in a release that NPS has long supported preservation efforts related to African American civil rights history. Since 2016, the National Park Service has provided over $126 million through this program to document, preserve, and recognize the places and stories associated with the struggle for civil rights of African Americans. United Airlines just announced a simple change, and this was related to assigned seats. You know how sometimes when you make a reservation online and you go to choose your seat, and the only thing that's available is a middle seat, or maybe you even get a window, but you wanted an aisle. You don't get the seat that you want at that particular time. Well, United has a new feature that allows you to choose your seat now at the time of booking. And also you can use the preferred seating request or choose seat preference. In this way, you indicate if you would prefer a window aisle, or you could say something like, I don't like exit rows, or something like that. And then it's an automatic thing that'll happen where United will monitor seat requests when you ask it to, and will automatically move you up to 12 hours before the departure should your preferred seat choice become available. So it's not that you can't do it now, but now United has it in their system that it can automatically happen. And I don't know about you, but I am certainly in the time period in my season of automation. It saves time, and it's one less thing that I have to do or worry about having to go back constantly and check what seats are available. So yeah, you can do that. You can continue to do that, or you can use their choose seat preference. I haven't tested it out yet because I haven't made a reservation since this has happened. So I'll check it out as soon as I can and let you know how well it works and how much it saved time. There are certainly some urgent matters of the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration. The House and Senate lawmakers have reached an agreement on the FAA reauthorization bill that would require the agency to set maximum hiring targets for air traffic controllers, to mandate deployment of surveillance systems at medium and large hub airports, and expand from 2 to 25 hours the minimum recording time of flight data recorders. That one surprised me. I didn't realize it was such a short time of recorded data on these boxes. So anyway, real-time tracking. Here are the main categories. When two or more aircraft are on the same part of a runway or taxiway simultaneously, it's called an incursion. And it has happened more than 1,700 times in the U.S. last year. Each incident is a potential disaster, as happened in Tokyo when a landing passenger plane hit a Japanese Coast Guard aircraft that had taxied onto the runway at the wrong time. The risks posed by incursions at the top of the list as Congress puts forth a new 5-year plan for the Federal Aviation Administration, or as we call it, FAA. Currently, just 36 airports have the latest system to stop incursions. They will expand to many more airports, bringing real-time tracking of aircraft on the ground and automated alerts when two aircraft are likely to get too close. The other issue is air traffic controller shortage. The FAA is looking at a shortage of 3,000 air traffic controllers right now. They're only 54% staffed at the New York facility, which is not a good situation. This means fewer flights may have to be offered. The FAA has about 10,700 certified controllers, and that's down 10% since 2012. The new bill requires the agency to maximize hiring and to fill those 3,000 positions as soon as possible. Safety is another issue. Another safety-related provision will require cockpit recorders to store 25 hours of data, up from just 2 hours at the moment. Several incidents triggered the change, most recently when a door plug on an Alaskan airline flight blew out at 16,000 feet. Investigators could not examine a key part of the flight leading up to the catastrophe because the voice recordings had been overwritten by the time the plane landed safely. Those are some of the key features in the reauthorization and the key focuses with FAA. Louisville, Kentucky Airport is welcoming Derby fans. You have your fascinator ready? Louisville Muhammad Ali International Airport was adorned with more than 3,000 fresh roses, and staff handed out 30,000 Woodford Reserve bourbon balls at the airport. They are prepared to welcome an estimated 34,000 visitors flying in for the Kentucky Derby. 30,000 bourbon balls. You know, I love bourbon balls. I started making them a few Christmases ago, and everybody really loved them, although they said they were a little too strong. But can they ever be? I don't know. Well, Hawaiian Airlines launches 31 days of lei. Hawaiian Airlines says its traditional Lei Day celebration will last all month this year as the airline upheld the local tradition of giving lei to incoming visitors by handing out more than 1,500 of the garlands at Honolulu's Daniel K. International Airport and Kona Airport on the Big Island of Hawaii. During the 31 days of lei celebration, Hawaiian will give 200,000 frequent flyer miles each week in May to 5 lucky winners. They will also open pop-up lei stands at airports in Los Angeles, Salt Lake City, and Tokyo, and sponsor a May Day concert. Now, Clear offers TSA PreCheck enrollment at 3 airports. You know, I just love Clear PreCheck. Although both of those lines are getting longer, aren't they? I don't know if you've experienced the same thing. But when you have Clear and PreCheck, you go to the front of the line, don't have to take off your shoes, your belts, all of those things. It's just so seamless. Travelers can now enroll in the Transportation Security Administration's PreCheck expedited screening program at Clear locations in 3 airports. The first Clear sites to offer the service are at Florida's Orlando International Airport, Newark Liberty International Airport in New Jersey, and Sacramento International Airport in California. I'm telling you, you've got to get that Clear PreCheck. Having one or the other is great, but having both of them is just fantabulous. Delta is donating onboard sales to breast cancer research. Delta Airlines will donate 25% of all onboard food and beverage sales in the month of May to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation and 100% of purchases made on Mother's Day, May 12. Delta has raised $24.75 million for Breast Cancer Research Foundation since 2005, and employees and customers can donate through the airline's website. Now, Kansai International Airport, that's located in Osaka, Japan, will celebrate its 30-year anniversary in September, and it will mark 3 decades. Wait for it. Without losing a single piece of luggage. Now, how does that happen? The airport has a specific system in place to ensure that every piece of baggage reaches its owner undamaged, with employees working in teams of 2 or 3 to limit the number of hands the suitcases go through and taking extra care to make sure the items aren't damaged. Every worker has to follow a detailed handling instruction, which dictate how cargo holds in the planes should be loaded and unloaded, as well as the differences between the various airlines servicing the airport. Now, up to 30 million passengers travel via Kansai International Airport per year and bring 11 million pieces of luggage with them. Well, that's all I've got for travel news. And when I come back, I'm joined by Elaine Lee, editor of Go Girl 2, a Black woman's book to travel and adventure.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit TravelingCulturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Make sure you head on over to the website, travelingculturati.com, and join the travel club because we go to some fantastic places and you want to be a part of the Culturati as well. We have some wonderful, immersive travel experiences.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
Do you know the difference between basic, regular, and premium economy? Well, the branding can be overwhelming for economy class, mainly because there are so many different varieties of seating to choose from, each with its own perks and restrictions, and by airline. So here are some key differences between basic economy, standard economy, extra legroom economy, and premium economy. So first, Standard versus basic. Economy class, also called coach or main cabin seats in economy, are typically between 17 and 18 inches wide. You know, we've lost like 6 inches over the course of time in the last 20 plus years, but I digress. There is a 30 to 32 inch seat pitch. That's the distance between each row. So standard economy flyers are often susceptible to fees for checked bags and in-flight food and drinks, which can raise the cost of the trip, but it may allow you to still book your seats in advance. But in 2012, Delta became the first airline to introduce a subsection of economy class tickets called basic economy. And then, of course, other major airlines followed suit. So basic economy is for the price-sensitive traveler. And no frills, basically. So typically, basic economy tickets are non-refundable and non-changeable. And basic economy flyers are amongst the last to board. No pre-assigned seats, so you may get them upon check-in or maybe even at the gate or once you get to the airport. So the greatest benefit of both basic and regular economy seating is, of course, affordability. Now, extra legroom. Within the economy cabin, many airlines offer dedicated seats up to 6 additional inches of legroom. And this is, of course, going to vary by airline. These extra legroom economy seats go by different names. So it depends on which airline you're flying on. Could be Economy Plus, Comfort Plus, Main Cabin Extra, Premium Class, Even More Space. These are the different names on different airlines that you can find for extra legroom seats. Whatever they're called, extra legroom seats can be attractive, especially for passengers who are taller or looking for that extra comfort and are willing to pay a little bit more. These economy seats also come with extra perks. They're located in the front of the cabin. And while they do cost additional on domestic flights, depending on the airline, you may also get priority boarding privileges. Now, premium economy. So if you're willing to splurge a little bit more, but not so much as you would pay for business or first class, premium economy is a more luxurious offer for economy. Especially on international flights, some airlines, like, for example, Delta, consider it their business class. It's very much like the old day or traditional business class seat, which now business classes lie flat. Premium economy is not. It has a greater recline, but it is not lie flat. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute.
Well, today I have the honor and pleasure of chatting with Elaine Lee, editor of Go Girl 2, the Black woman's book of travel and adventure. Well, hello, Elaine, and welcome to Traveling Culturati.
Thank you so much, Javon.
Absolutely. So what got you into the world of travel?
Well, that's such a good question. When I decided to take my first trip around the world to celebrate my 40th birthday, I was amazed that I really had never met a Black woman who had traveled around the world by herself. And that was all the way back into 1992. And there were no Black travel books. Like I said, never met a Black woman who traveled around the world. And I was terrified, Javon, truly, am I going to be okay? What is this going to be like? And I planned it all out. And I was so nervous that towards the end, and a friend of mine said to me, Elaine, remember, money is a replenishable resource. Time is not. Get out there and see the world. And I've got your back. Don't worry. So I got out there for 6 months. I made my way around the world. And at the end, realizing what a magnificent experience it was, I thought, I don't want other Black women to have to go through what I went through in terms of my fear. They need to see a role model. They need to see Black travel literature. And at the end of that trip, I decided I would write a travel book for Black women. And that was when Go Girl, the Black Woman's Book of Travel and Adventure, the first edition, was published shortly thereafter. And then I realized now, almost 20 plus years later, there's a need for another travel book with an opportunity for the modern voice of Black women travelers to be heard. And so I created Go Girl 2.
Things have certainly changed. I've been in the travel industry now for 40 years. I mean, I used to handwrite airline tickets. So yeah, we've come a very, very long way. But I love the advice that your friend gave you, that money is replenishable. We can always find a way to make money. But yes. Time is not. We can't go back and get time. And, you know, it reminds me of another quote that's often said, is that the thing that people regret the most are the things they didn't do, much more so than the things that they did, even the mistakes that they made, because they're always learning experiences. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well, thank you so much for having the vision to put the book together and to get it out there so that others can look at it and to say, you know, we need an update of this. So tell us more about the book, Go Girl 2, the Black Woman's Book of Travel and Adventure.
Well, it's actually an anthology, and I'm the editor, and I put together this book with the help of 54 Black women. Yes, there are 54 Black women's voices that can be heard through this book, through poems, through photos, through travel tales. The first chapter is about traveling to Africa, loads of wonderful stories about different experiences there in Kenya, in Namibia, in Egypt. There's a second chapter on traveling through the diaspora, countries where African slaves were taken, Central, South America, the USA. And then last, and the next chapter is about traveling other places in the world, like India, Indonesia, Italy. And the fourth chapter is called The Genesis of the Traveling Spirit, which is stories from Black women about their philosophy, the idea of traveling alone, just different aspects of the travel experience. And lastly, there's a resource guide and a planning guide. So it's everything a sister needs to get herself on the road. And I am so pleased that over the years since Go Girl 1 came out, I've just gotten thousands of emails and calls and texts from people letting me know that this book gave them the courage to get out there in the world, that they were fearful. And after reading these stories, they realized, I can do this. And they have done it. And it really helps fortify me to keep doing this kind of work.
So with Go Girl 2, you said the need to modernize it. What were those differences between Go Girl 1 and Go Girl 2?
Well, Go Girl 2 actually has the voices of a new generation of travel writers. When the first book came out, actually in 97, yeah, I had great voices in there too. There weren't any travel writers per se. These were just women who had travel stories to tell. But now you've got travel bloggers and writers and podcasters. So I felt that their voices needed to be heard and anchored in a book, because there has been no other Black women's travel anthology since my first one in 97. And also because things have just changed. I mean, when I took my first trip around the world, I had a handful of airline tickets. You know, I had to mail travel books to myself to American Express offices around the country because I couldn't carry all my travel books. I had a 26-pound backpack. They didn't have wheels in those days. There was no GPS. You know, I had to carry maps and figure out how to navigate the planet that way. So there's just so many changes in the whole travel venue that needed to uplift. Even listing, as I did, at least 25 major Black travel Facebook groups. Recently, I went to Peru, and I was like, oh, my goodness, I've never been here. I wonder if I can find somebody that can tell me about the Black community in Peru. I put it on Black Travel Movement. Within a day, I got like bombarded with suggestions. And one in particular was useful. This guy said, my goddaughter lives in El Carmen, 3 hours south of Lima. Would you take a gift to her for me? And we arranged for that to happen. And I was able to be hosted by this beautiful Black community in Peru. And that's the beauty of now we have social media. Then there was none when I did my first trip around the world.
And those are some significant changes. But, you know, hearing some of the, even just that one story is just a reminder of how travel makes us storytellers. And they're wonderful stories and memories to have. So how did you put the book together?
Well, I sent out calls for submission to people who I thought might be a wonderful addition to the book. And then, oh my God, editing and then re-editing and, you know, having to reorganize a lot of the stories and figuring out which sections they should be in. And then what happened, Javon, this time, not only putting all the stories together and figuring out the right flow so that they would maintain interest and be informative, but I decided to publish it myself. So that was a whole new learning curve, which added another layer of complexity. But I'm very, very pleased with the outcome. Yes.
Fantastic. And I know you mentioned that before there were people with just stories, and now they're actual bloggers and travel writers and podcasters. You want to share who some of those contributors are?
Yes. Martinique Lewis, the president of Black Travel Alliance, just won the Bessie Award from the largest women's travel association, WITS, Women in Travel Summit. And I don't know if you've heard of Lola Akerstam. She just won an award from NAACP for her travel writing for their NAACP Image Awards. I also have new Saro Wiwa, who just did an award-winning podcast about this Black traveler who went to Greenland, the first African traveler to Greenland in the 50s, about his experience in Greenland. So those are some of the travel writers, the newer ones that are a part of the group. And Nika Okana is another one. And then also you may have heard of Rue Mapp. She founded Outdoor Afro, which started here in Oakland, California, where I live near. And now it has 60 chapters, and it's in a group that helps Black people get into the outdoors. So she started this organization, one chapter, and now has 60, and it's become very, very successful. And she is aligned with REI Outdoor Supply Company, and now they just started their own tour company. So it's just following her business model. How did she create a travel business, she talks about in the book. So that's another example of a new person and a new voice. And lastly, Cherie Williams started the organization called Cuisine Noir, which is a Black travel food blog and website. And she, has created a very successful network. And her work is featured as well. And she talks about how she, went about creating that organization. So that's just an example of some of the new voices and the new experiences that are in the book, as well as I have the veterans, like stories from Maya Angelou, Alice Walker, Jill Nelson, voices that people are familiar with.
Certainly. That's just fantastic. I'm sure in this process, there are some wonderful stories. What are your favorites?
That's so hard because they're all like little babies. I love them so much for so many reasons. But one story, really, it almost sounds mystical, but it's true. But reading it and hearing it just floored me, and I knew I had to have it in my book, is this sister who dearly, dearly wanted a child. She and her husband tried everything possible, all the new modern technologies, and nothing was working. And after like 5 years of this, they decided, okay, we have to just give up. So they decided, we're going to take a trip to Africa. We're just going to let that all go. We're going to start a new life for ourselves and just embrace travel. We love travel. We love beaches, whatever. Let's go to Gambia. So they decided to use their frequent flyer miles. Off they go to Gambia, and they have problems in the airport. And this guy helps them navigate this. Some man that they saw on the plane helped them get through that. And he said, I'm also a tour guide. And he took them on a tour and they had a great time. And somehow in the process of all this, she told him why they were there and that they were recovering from this realization. He's like, you want to have children? Okay. Well, I can take you to a certain ritual in a certain place and we can try to help you. So he took her to this special, lake where these women come once a month or whatever, every few weeks or something. And he met them and they did this ritual. And then when she got back home, maybe 6 months later, she not only got pregnant, but she had successfully had twins. And her life has never been the same. And she's so grateful that this dream of hers to have healthy, happy children came to her. So she dedicated the story to that guide who helped her realize her dream.
Now, you say that it's an asset to be a Black woman when you travel. What do you mean by that?
Yes, well, because in America, we're third and fourth class citizens here, and we often are not treated with a lot of respect. We'll go to a restaurant and they'll want to sit us by the kitchen table, kitchen door. Still, to this day, you go into certain nice upscale stores and they're following you around. And I just think that, it's kind of like a Black tax we have to pay that is a burden. And I think it's really important for Black women to shed that and to see the world where they will be more than likely treated as a first-class citizen and really appreciate it. It's remarkable that most places in the world are not governed by a pigmentocracy like we are in America. We're judged when we're abroad by our hearts and who we are as people. And it's just really refreshing and helpful to experience that. So that's why I say it's an asset. I mean, people actually, particularly like in France, they actually really like Black Americans. I mean, there are certain places that go into Africa, you know, welcome. Oh, my sister, welcome home. There's so many places that welcome us and not scorn us. And that's why I say it's really an asset. And I've experienced very, very little racism on the road. It's little compared to what I have to deal with almost on a daily basis in America.
Yeah, well, it's the unfortunate thing here in America that race is very prevalent, or ethnicity. I like to say ethnicity is very prevalent. So it is something, especially as a Black person in America, that we are very mindful of and reminded of every day when we just step foot outside of our home. We walk with that. And we do. We have to, because it's that shield for us. It is unfortunate. It doesn't mean that there isn't racism around the world, because it is. It just means that it's not as prevalent, and it's kind of a cloak or shield we can kind of take off sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. And we don't realize the weight that we're carrying until we take it off.
Yeah, it is pretty heavy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we don't realize that.
That as a Black person and as a woman, I remember when I was in Ubud, Indonesia, in Bali, and one night I was coming from a Saturday night, coming from some kind of play that I had gone to, and I had left my flashlight, and I realized, oh my God, here I am on this dark road and all alone and no flashlight. And I realized, oh my God, no one's going to harm me. I'm not going to be raped. I'm not going to be robbed. If anybody sees me, they're going to like, how can I help you? And that was such a liberating feeling to know I was safe as a woman, you know? And I said, I'm going to remember this feeling, because it was, yeah, just such a liberating moment in my life. And I said, Elaine, you must remember this, you know?
Absolutely.
So when you go back home and you're like, okay, I can't carry my purse at night. Oh, I got to dress down. I got, you know, all the things we go through as women to protect ourselves. There are places where you don't have to have any protection. You're just safe.
Yeah. And recognizing those differences around the world. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and it's one that I get asked a lot being in the travel industry, and I struggle with it sometimes, but it just makes me think sometimes back on some of my experiences. So I ask it of you as well. And that is, favorite places you've visited.
Yes. It is hard for me because there's so many, but I'll keep it to five and I'll say it quickly. But I absolutely love Paris, France, as I alluded to earlier. I absolutely love Thailand. Been there three times, a month each time. I loved Brazil and New Zealand. Oh, wow. What a highly functional society. It's really great to see. And I really enjoyed and appreciated and was grateful and gleeful to visit Egypt and Namibia. Those are, I say, probably a few of my favorites.
And you mentioned New Zealand and how highly functional the society is. It's a country run by a woman, and they did extremely well during the pandemic because they did the simple things quickly. And of course, the society jumped on board with it. But that's something that I recognize a lot when I travel, is how a society functions, because I compare it a lot to what we have going on here, and how I sometimes say we're the divided states of America,
yeah,
not the United
that's
States
a good
of America.
Point. I love that characterization.
Yeah. And so thanks for highlighting that with New Zealand. I too really love New Zealand as a destination. And yes, the society is just like, we're taken care of. We love where we live. We love who we are. And we see ourselves as a community at large.
Yes.
Yeah.
Their respect for the Maori people. When I was visiting there and talking to indigenous people, and they say, you know, we know, you know, there are problems for us, but of all the folks that have been colonized, we probably have it better than any. So they do really make an effort to respect that culture, which I admire as well.
Yes.
And integrate that into the larger culture.
Now, why do you encourage Black people to travel to Africa at least one time?
I say that when you go to Africa, you get back part of your soul that you didn't even know was missing. When you go back and you realize, oh my God, there is still so much Africanness still in so many of us that we don't even know it's African, because the slave master worked so hard to separate us from Africa. We don't realize it until we get there. My first time to Africa was to Kenya. And I was at this restaurant and they had like watermelon and black-eyed peas and rice and cornbread. And I'm like, wow, this is all so familiar. And I saw so many familiar faces on strangers. There was just so much commonality that I realized within a short period of time that I was an African that just happened to be from America. I felt so at home. It was just so healthy for me to be around, be a part of a majority culture, to see Black people running things, the pilots, the president, the money has Black people on it. It's very edifying to see, as well as just, for example, particularly in Kenya and other places, Namibia, the beauty of the country. And it gives you a certain level of pride to be from someplace so beautiful and so rich, as well as the birthplace of humankind and a birthplace of civilization, which you witness when you're in Egypt. It just fills you with pride to know what our people were doing 5,000 years ago. And to this day, they still can't even figure out how they built the pyramids. It just strengthens you to know that our people created these kinds of things. And then also, for example, when I visited Seychelles Islands off the east coast of Kenya, which is the second richest country in Africa, I mean, such, again, kind of like New Zealand, highly functional society, 90% home ownership, 90% literacy rate, very little crime, great infrastructure. And you wonder, well, why don't they show these images on mass media? You don't hear anything about this. You just see folks on TV, they show you Africans fighting or dying or sick or something. So it's important to go see for yourself that it's not the way Africa is portrayed in the mass media often.
Yeah, and that firsthand experience is like no other. I know when I travel to places, especially in Africa, to various countries, and like you said, you see yourself, you see your family members in faces.
Yeah.
But also when you talk to people, like you mentioned Seychelles also being a high functioning society. And so I was chatting with someone there and they were explaining the government provides housing for everyone.
Yes.
However, yes. It's not free. You do have to pay it back, but it's at a really good rate and
yes.
It's at a very good loan rate as well. But they make sure that everyone has access to housing. So whether you decide to rent or buy, it's up to you. And that's why they have 90% home ownership, because the government supports its society. And so it's really good to get out and to learn how different societies function, because sometimes as Americans coming from this great country that has so much, we oftentimes don't understand how other countries are functioning and how maybe we can learn from them.
Yes.
Rather than us always being the leaders, and that sometimes we may not have the best practices.
Yes.
So yeah. So just kind of broadening your thoughts and all of that. So what do we have coming up from you? Any upcoming events? Any more expansions? Where is this going to take you in the near future?
Oh, well, I should say, Javon, that one of my travel philosophies is that I try to go to a new country every year. And then I always try to go on a beach vacation every year because I'm a long distance fitness swimmer. And I also go to Paris every year because I have a created family there in one of the many Black expat communities. So this year, my new country is going to be Portugal. I have never been to Portugal. So I am going to be going with this group called Backroads, and I'm going to be doing my first river cruise. I've never done a river cruise before. And Backroads is a bicycle touring company, and we will be stopping at little towns along the Douro River and biking in and experiencing these little communities and back on the boat at night and on to the next little town. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be interesting and different. And also I'll be taking the civil rights trail in southern United States with a company called Road Scholars. And I've never done that. I've never been to Bryan Stevenson's incredible museums in Montgomery, Alabama. So I'm really looking forward to that trip and writing about that. And since the trip will be ending in Montgomery, it'll be near where my mother was born, Monroeville, Alabama. And I'm going to get a chance to visit there, which I haven't been since I was 9 years old. And I'm excited about that ancestral blessing to get back to the homeland where my mom was born in 1912. And she and I visited there when I was 9 years old. And that was my first experience, my first and only experience with Jim Crow South. So I think it'll be an interesting story of what it'll be like to revisit the South, her homeland, now that Jim Crow has been lifted.
Yes. Well, All of those sound like some wonderful experiences, and we'll have you back on to share some of those with us. How can people learn more about the book? And again, I want to remind everyone, this is Elaine Lee, editor of Go Girl 2, the Black woman's book of travel and adventure.
Yes. So the easy way to find me is just Google Elaine Lee Travel Writer, and it'll take you to my website, which is actually called You Go Girl, the letter U, the word go, and girl spell with a U. Or they can just go to Amazon and put in Go Girl 2, and boom, there will be the book as well as a link back to my website. And so right now, just the paperback is available, but the ebook will be available soon. The paperback is $25 and the ebook will be $15. And that will be coming out later this month or first part of next month.
Well, fantastic. Again, it's You Go Girl Productions and the release of Go Girl 2, the Black woman's book of travel and adventure. And you can go to Amazon to buy the book. And that certainly is something that you want to do. Well, Elaine, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Javon. This was an honor, a privilege, and a delight.
When we come back, I've got the culture report.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Once again, make sure you head on over to the website and join the travel club. Go to travelingculturati.com. We go to some fantastic places and you don't want to miss out. Culture is forever changing and reflecting what's happening in the society and with its people. It can be born of the arts, music, food, and sometimes politics and strife. This is the Culture Report.
Chef Ruby is back for part two. Her food is amazing.
One of the most talked about dining experiences that our groups have ever had. Hello, Chef Ruby, and welcome to Traveling Culturati.
Hello, Traveling Culturati.
Well, I can only tell you that I have been very jealous and envious when my groups return, especially the ones that I have not traveled with from Ghana, and they just rave about the experience that they had with you. Now, I have to tell you all that Chef Ruby is a professional chef who, for the past 30 years, perfected her culinary skills and worked with several major international brands, clients, and individuals, and our groups have been one of them. So, you know, again, I've just heard so many wonderful things about you. So with the honor and pleasure that we've had with experiencing your authentic culinary delights with our groups in Ghana, yeah, I'm hoping to be on the next one.
Oh, we look forward to welcoming you. We call ourselves the food people for a reason. If you have the love of food, then you're in the right company. We will do anything to have the most amazing experience with food, because that is truly the one thing that we cannot do without as human beings.
What was your journey back home to Ghana from London?
So about 8 years ago, my father, who struggled a little bit at the age of 70 with a heart condition, and passed away. My father was also quite a very traditional person, always wanted us to kind of come back to Ghana and, you know, sort of live. And after a year when he passed, I came to Ghana because he wanted to be buried in Ghana. So we came to bury him when he was, obviously he passed. A year later, I came to Ghana, and out of curiosity, I was like, you know, I would like to just eat in as many restaurants. I did a little bit of research as possible to see what the food scene is like here. Because at the time, so I came back, my grandmother was quite old, and I've always sort of made a promise to myself that I would take care of her when she's in her old age, even though, you know, most people in my family are fighting to do that anyway. So at the time I did that, went around the country, ate as many restaurants as I can. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, we don't really have the best of the fine dining in the country, the one that I was used to doing in London. It fascinated me, you know, restaurants that people thought it was the top of the range. I was like, really? Is this the top of the range? Then we're a bit behind. So luckily for me, I met a friend of mine who had sort of a boutique hotel, asked me to do some guest chef in the country for her. And it went viral. It was quite good. They offered me some opportunity to come and develop their products there, which I managed to do with one of the top restaurants in Ghana at the time. So for me, it was a journey. One was to really just come and spend some time with my grandmother. Second, while I'm there, I need to work. And then I found some interesting things to do. But during the COVID time, it was like there's certain part of things I want to do. I wanted that independent, you know, COVID made you think like, you know, now or never, you know, all these ideas you've had, you're going to do it now, you're never going to do it. So it was like, you know, people were scared, they were at home. I said, you know what? This is the time that people have got together with their families. They want to spend quality time. So I created this company that we initially was like, oh, fine dining on wheels. We'll come and do some bit of, you know, special birthdays. Then people just kind of got to know. They started calling me. I remember getting COVID-19 vaccinated and we would be going to people's home when they trusted us to kind of do meals for them. And then it just became something that everybody looked forward to. And that was the beginning on the birth of the food people. It was really about certain people that used to love my restaurants and wanted the same food there. And they just followed me everywhere. They carried me with them. They would give me dinner for 10. Then at the same time, they would give me wedding for 200. And then it became, oh, can you do a corporate event for me for 300? And then it started from that. And for us, it was always this very high-end, very fantastic ingredients. Not just the food, but I mean, the sourcing of the ingredients means a lot to us. Who are we sourcing it from? Who are we trying to impact? And so on. And that is how the food people really started. And now they're one of these people that even when we do the biggest things in the country, they will call us as one of the number one caterers to come in and take care of some of the very important things that happens into this country. So I'm blessed that we are able to birth this company through just a passion of mine that I just love food and I like the best of it and I want the best ingredients and I'm not going to compromise on that. And I came to find that a lot of people also want the best and they want it healthy, they want it tasty, they want the quality of the ingredients to be the best. I mean, I remember I was one of the first people that said, you know what, we're going to create a company that any ingredients we wanted to play with, anywhere in the world, globally, we will find it. And it has come to pass. I mean, we can source from Paris, Germany, we can source from Holland, Paris market, we have some there every day. We have London, we source from South Africa, we source from. And I don't think there's a thing that if we really needed it to create what we want to create. So I feel like I'm living my fairy tale in a dream with my team. We take every project and we call it a project in a sense that we are event people. So every day, anything we touch, whether it's for 10 people, whether it's for 20 people, we are going to blow you away and give you the best of that particular thing that we have said. And that's what keeps us going. We're very crazy excited people every day. And we're learning all the time. My teams are always online, learning different things. I mean, we got our head bachelor at the moment. He's finishing his bachelor degree. And every day he's practicing certain things that it's exciting. It's exciting. I mean, I believe I'm living my purpose. And the people that are coming to my company are also living their purpose because we love food and we respect where it's taking us. And we're using that to develop a team. We're using that, like, for example, our casual team that works for us, most of them are universities and we prefer them. They're doing something for themselves. We want to push them, give them some shift so that they can actually just be a little bit more independent and all that. Every angle of this company is to build and develop people that comes in touch with it.
Yes, I'm getting excited about that as well. And I can tell you that you have blown our groups away and people came away with a very personal experience that you provided to them. So thank you so much for that. What is your approach to, as it sounds like, the sourcing of your ingredients from all over the world? Any Ghanaian fusions happening?
Yes. So most of our meals, we can create a lot of things. We're almost like that kind of set on a movie where we're creating the scenes. But for me personally, we have been able to do Ghanaian, Asian fusion is something we do. So for example, We do this black cod that is very Japanese, but at the same time, we've got this mango that we salted it. And then we have like this black rice, which is all very Ghanaian. So the other ones that we also do is we do a lot of English and Ghanaian fusion. So for example, we have this raka lamb, slow roasted, but we have been able to use our yam, our pono yam, which is the best in the world, to do the croquette. We have the tarragon. So we have this crunchy, soft in the middle. It still has that kind of pea puree, this local filled mushroom. So it's a marriage that's beautiful. This particular dish has been on my menu for 8 years and I can't get rid of it, even if I want to. It's a good fusion. So fusion we like a lot because I think actually the world is, a lot of fusion is happening everywhere. Because the more we get to know about ingredients in different places, we more want to experiment. We realize, oh, actually this will go with my this dish I've got here or this particular ingredients. So for us, I source quite a lot from Ghana. I'm very blessed because one of the things that I have is I have a guy, company who is on the canoeing in Takrady, who I can bring me fresh prawns, crevettes, massive lobsters, you know, the grouper fish, they're so fresh. So I actually know who is sourcing my ingredients. I know the guys, the family guys come from his grandfather to his father to him. He sourced the most amazing things straight from the sea. We're getting this. We can't get it fresher than that. I have relationship with suppliers that would have people sitting in Paris, more than 5 or 6, which just this evening I was like, oh, I'm doing something for someone. I need a scallops. I've run out of certain. I need another 10 portion. I've literally had to just WhatsApp somebody. They were like, you know, we've got this came in last night, very fresh, this and all that. And I've got it. So for me, the sourcing is always about relationship. In terms of sourcing, like today I wanted, what do you call it? Chilean sea bass for a particular event that I needed to do for somebody. It was very easy. I was able to call someone in Holland who I can source. I'm like, oh, I need this and all that. He's bringing me different species for me to choose from. Those are there. But I also got the vast majority of things in Ghana that I'm able to get, especially like yams, cocoyams, the greens, the vegetables, which is amazing, the herbs. So for us, I feel like when people say they can't get certain things, it's a lazy behavior. You need to have a good relationship with your people because the people that source for us, they're so excited. I feel like they're in a journey with us. Do you understand what I mean? They always, oh, chef, you know, we saw this and what do you want? You know, I brought these truffles in. What do you think? So for me, it's just that whole crazy people around me who love food and know the ingredients and, you know, the best people pressing the coconut oil and be like, oh, you know, last night I did this. You need to come and taste it. I'm excited because the relationship I have with food, only the Lord knows.
Chef Ruby, what a wonderful conversation with you. And I could just feel your passion. And again, going on the experiences that our groups have had with you. So I want to thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we look forward to seeing you in Ghana soon.
Absolutely. And how do we follow you?
Chef Ruby's Food People on social media, Instagram. We're very easy to follow. It's a sighting page. It's a part of ourselves and where we're going. And at the moment, we're getting all these new revamps because we've done lots of events that has ended up on it. So it is a good time to follow and then to see what is coming. So many new things are coming, product development, products are coming on it. So it's really exciting time. So it's good time to follow Chef Ruby's Food People. Yes.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you. And until we meet again.
Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Ladies and gentlemen.